I mean, it's not like you had to do the trivia. That's taken care of today.
The trivia is taken care of this week. I was worried I would have to do it.
Yeah.
And then cower as you continue to berate the grand tradition of Game Show Friday. By the way, my favorite tweet this week about Game Show Friday was the guy who said, well, maybe we should just make Game Show Friday its own podcast. Which, of course, you know, speaks directly to the problems with it, which is that, you know, nobody likes when it takes up the last 15 minutes of Friday's show. So then we'll just give it an hour.
No, but you know what that means? That means if it's its own separate podcast, it doesn't be part of this podcast and someone else can ignore it.
It'd be like the peanut butter and jelly debate. You know, your peanut butter would be the hockey history podcast. Yeah. My jelly would be Game Show Friday podcast.
Yeah, it would be like when you walked in the record store and it would be way in the back with like field call music. That's where it would be. You don't want either the rock and the pop and the jazz and the classical. It would be way in the back. I don't even think iTunes would accept it, to be honest with you.
There's no stakes. That's the real issue. People are playing for a nebulous prize that we promised them. We say that that Matt would give it to them. I don't even know if Matt sends them out, to be honest with you. It's a very imagine if the, you know what we need? We need like a dunk tank. Here we go to the carnival and see the dunk tank. If there was some sort of a trigger that would allow us to plunge into icy water or suffer some embarrassment, I think more people would be into it.
You'll love this one, and it gives you another chance to make fun of me and where I live. My kids did the dunk tank with the local firemen here a month ago at the, wait for it, Stouffville Strawberry Festival.
Stouffville Strawberry Festival.
It's true.
And by the way, the Strawberry Festival, the crux of it is they actually finally grew one. They grew a strawberry and decided to dedicate the entire festival.
Like,
they all surround the strawberry.
Thank you very much.
They coddle it for a moment.
Behold, they bring it out on the steps of City Hall at high noon. Everyone, come behold the strawberry we were able to grow here in Stouffville.
I saw a dunk tank at the county fair. I took Vivian and Ruby to over the weekend, and like the dunk tank guy was really playing his role well. He was one of those belligerent dunk tank guys where he was just like berating people as they walked by. Ah, I know why you can't throw, because you got a limp wrist. Ah, look at you. Are you a tough rapper? Are you 2 Chainz? He was the most inappropriate guy hire, but the business is booming. And so
you need a guy like Beetlejuice from the Howard Stern show. That'd be the ultimate dunk tank guy who just completely berate the crowd.
And with that, we get to a man who I think many of us would have put at the forefront of our dunk tank lists, and that would be Gary F. Bettman, commissioner of the National Hockey League. Gary was challenged by Jeremy Jacobs to do the ice bucket challenge. And since
he was challenged by a lot. Hang on. Jay Onright, our buddy over at Fox Sports 1, he challenged him as well. On his.
The first name he mentioned was Jeremy Jacobs. And as you know, whatever Jeremy Jacobs wants, Gary Bettman does. So Gary Bettman did the ice bucket. Oh, exactly. Gary Bettman did the ice bucket challenge, and it sounded something like this.
Oh, we got it. Good.
I'm Gary Bettman, and I'm here to meet the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, courtesy of shout-outs from Jeremy Jacobs,
John
Butchergrass, Mark Chipman, and a number of other people who over the last couple of days thought it would be appropriate for me
Bettman
to cool
is
off.
Wearing shorts in this.
I would like to challenge John McConnell for, among other things, hosting a wonderful afternoon here at Double Eagle. And I would also like to challenge Brian Burke, Rob Blake, and Brendan Shanahan, all great hockey legends who at one time or another worked at the league office and decided to go on and do other things. ALS is a terrible disease.
I would like to challenge the people who quit on me to pour cold water on their heads.
There seems to be more ice than water, but I guess we'll deal with that.
By the way, he's wearing a winter classic hooded sweatshirt and sunglasses.
It's full.
Sunglasses.
I think it's going to be cold.
Hooded sweatshirt. Shorts.
Bad move by the sunglasses. I hope they weren't expensive sunglasses.
Wow. As someone mentioned on Twitter when this video was released yesterday, the noise that Bettman makes when the ice water hits him and cascades over him may be the first moment of actual humanity recorded on record emanating from Gary Bettman.
No, because I remember the Bob Goodenow era with the National Hockey League Players Association. I'm sure he felt like that a couple of different times over 204, 205.
It's true. It was a very, very emotional time. So now have we reached the, pardon the pun, saturation point now with the Ice Bucket Challenge, now that Gary Bettman's done it?
No, still not for me. I'm still happy to see, you know, all my friends and people that listen to this podcast put their videos up on Twitter. I'll still click on every single one of them and have a peek. So no, I'm not there yet. I'm not sure if you're there by even asking the question. I'm guessing it's a loaded one that you probably are at the point
with the Ice Bucket
Challenge. But
I was asking.
I'm still digging it.
I was asking something sort of. Oh, actually, Brian Burke's Ice Bucket Challenge just went up. Now we may have reached the saturation point. By the way, in this video, I'm looking at it now on the Providence College men's hockey page. Burke is wearing sunglasses over his hair, so it's not true Burkey hair. That's really what I wanted to see out of this Ice Bucket Challenge, was true Burkey hair. But it looks like he does it, so you can check
Good
that
job,
out.
Brian.
Also, it looks like Buchagras and Hal Gill are the ones that douse Burke in this video. So there you go. No, it's great, and it's raised a ton of money, and everybody should feel real happy about it and stuff, and it's amazing how this has taken off. It's amazing how this
Listen, man,
taken
to
off.
Me, to me, this is like I, even if I do get a, you know, okay, I'm done with this thing, I don't think I can criticize it, at least publicly, because I still can't criticize Movember because of the awareness and the money that
Movember,
it raises for a really good cause.
The pink ribbon thing that's sort of been co-opted by some people like the NFL – for breast cancer research has also been one of those things too. I mean, yeah, it's, I understand the sort of hipster reaction to charities that become sensations, and how some people seem to be dumping water over their heads but not even mentioning the disease in their videos and that kind of thing. Like, I get that, but overall, there's no question that it's like crazy successful and crazy important and raised millions upon millions of dollars for ALS research because of it. So you gotta love
I always
it.
Say the same thing. If you don't like it, don't click on the links. Pretty simple. No need to be annoyed about something. Like, what's the point about being annoyed about it? Like, what is wrong in your life if this annoys you that much? It's pretty simple. Don't watch them. It's like being annoyed at reruns of Happy Days. Dude, no one's forcing you to watch it.
But they made him jump a shark. But do you understand the problem there?
And when they took the leather jacket off Fonz, you made him a teacher. What the hell's up with that?
That reminded me, like, when all the Robin Williams stuff was happening earlier this week, I was reading about Mork and Mindy. I completely forgot that they introduced Mork on an episode
on Happy Days.
Happy Days, in which the Fonz interacted with an alien.
That's correct. It's right. And then, you know, here's what's so great. I mean, I'm a kid of the 70s too, and maybe that's why I'm such a pro drug guy right now. But I mean, everybody was high, and everything got a free pass because everybody watched that show and went, "Oh yeah, okay, like it ain't no thing."
Yeah, but
even trying to reach for reality.
But it's hilarious when you think about it. It's like, oh, like, you know, the season one or two was like, oh my God, Richie was caught with a beer under his varsity jacket.
Ooh.
And then by like season
Posse
five,
had a pack of cigarettes.
Like,
ooh.
Yeah, season five was like the Fonz
stalking
alien. Because why not?
Right. I can never figure out why, if the Fonz was so cool, his office was the toilet. Someone still needs to explain that one to me.
Hey. We should touch on before the opening of the show, by the way, Ken Holland will join us today, GM of the Detroit Red
Very
Wings.
Very cool.
Very cool guy and a friend. I can think we could officially call him a friend of the program. Like, he's put up with so much shit from us.
I know.
That I think
That's
that
true.
We can call him a friend of the program. He keeps coming back.
Him and Jim Nill, too. Throw him as far as GMs go. Jim Nill as well.
I would also throw John Davidson in there as far as friends of the program. But we're kind of like Blue Jackets fanboys. By the way, Bettman was in Columbus yesterday talking about the Columbus All-Star Game, which I'm excited about. Not necessarily the All-Star Game, but an event like that being in Columbus, because I think they'll put on a hell of a party. But then teased the idea of potentially there being a Winter Classic at Ohio State University at some point.
Oh, and who do you think the opponents would be?
Oh, I don't know. Probably. Wait, no, actually, that's a really good question. Who do you think the opponents would be?
The Pittsburgh Penguins, the great burgeoning rivalry in the NHL East right now, going away.
They need to meet in the playoffs
one more time, and Columbus needs to win.
I agree, and I think that, you know, taking it to six is a moral victory. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as you do, sir. If you have Ohio State, okay, as your venue, there is a natural rival that could enter that stadium and automatically be the bad guy, which, of course, is any team from Michigan.
I don't think, I get that.
I don't think Pittsburgh but, is as open and shut as you do. I think it could be the Red Wings.
That's a maybe, but give me some. I mean, yeah, the first time the CBJ made it in there, they played against the Detroit Red Wings, and they got smoked for Cobb. That's done. I understand that's been a measure. Like, Detroit was a measuring stick for a couple of different franchises. One, Columbus. Two, Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that kind of played now? Like, isn't Columbus kind of.
Well, it's played, but in this case, it's more like tying into the NCAA tradition of both. I mean, in fact, I'd go as far as to make the Red Wings wear Wolverine sweaters and have Blue Jackets and Buckeye sweaters, and how awesome would that be? By the way, you know,
somewhere Nate Ewell just got really, really stiff.
Yeah, he was. I'm writing the Devil's Most Disappointing Moments piece for Puck Daddy during our summer series. I'm doing that. It's going to publish today. And I got to the part about their fashion. One of the categories is most disappointing fashion choice. And I don't think this will be it, but I gotta admit, man, like, I know it's one of the things that they do to differentiate the Stadium Series games from the Winter Classic, the idea that the Stadium Series games have these, like, chrome logos and stuff.
Yeah.
And the Winter Classic is the one where that has the throwback jerseys. It does kind of – I wish there were quirkier, different – I don't know what word you want me to use – jerseys for the Stadium Series games and simply, like, chromed-up versions of normal sweaters. Or even the – I mean, the Islanders jersey was different and okay, but, like, I really wish that there was a bit more outside-the-box, like, heritage jerseys and things like that for the Stadium Series games if we're going to keep doing them. I don't need the Winter Classic to be the only place where the old-timey jerseys make their appearances, for example, is one of the
both teams wear capes, just like Eddie Shore used to every now and then in warm-up in visiting rinks.
Capes?
Wear a villain's cape over top of the jersey.
Oh, I thought you meant just capes.
Just capes, no, yeah. Capes and togas. There's your point of differentiation.
Oh, capes versus togas. Hey, now.
Yeah, capes versus togas.
Mm-hmm. Frozen tundra of the Stadium Series game. Mm-hmm. Any problem, by the way, with there only being one Stadium Series game next year, as we understand that to be the case?
No, I'm cool with it. Yeah. I mean, I was a guy that originally just said, let's do this thing once every 4 years.
That's
and then when I saw the bonanza that was Buffalo and Pittsburgh, I said, maybe I need to rethink this thing.
Mayhaps.
And then I was a guy that said, okay, only once a year. And then everyone went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs last year over all the outdoor games, and everyone had a good time. And I said one thing. I said, you know what, Jeff? Just shut up. You know what? People like them. The local markets dig them. You still got the big event nationally every year. So if it's one, if it's five, if it's a dozen, I'm fine with it. Because to me, the event still hasn't done the Fonzie. I'm still fine with it. But if I'm not surprised that it's won. I mean, last year was like, hey, let's scoop back some revenue. And this year, you dial it back. And then you start to project out, okay, who's going to be next? You mentioned CBJ. How about Denver down the road? Minnesota's a team on the come. Like, I can see what they're after. You know, there's no point in shooting all these markets right now. Right? You can either run down the hill or you can walk down it. Right now,
I will say that I am a little disappointed that the San Jose game is not at the Giants ballpark with the view of the bay and everything, is that the new Niners stadium. I know why. I mean, capacity, throwing a bone to the Niners, the whole bit. But, like, remember when these things were all about being in picturesque places versus just being in the places with the largest capacity? Remember when we went to Wrigley and Fenway and how exciting that was? And now it's just like, put it in super mega dome stadium.
Well, wait till Dallas gets one, right?
That'll be the moment.
That'll be the moment where it's like, all right, who cares? Arts. What's this art stuff? It's called show business, not show arts. Let's just fill the stadium.
You know, I think that they're going to do it at Nationals Ballpark. There's no reason why they wouldn't do that in D.C. for the Winter Classic, but it's not been formally announced yet, and I can't figure out quite why. Like, the owner of the Nationals sits on the board of the Capitals. It makes total sense. I don't think they're going to hold it in the Redskins Stadium. I don't think they'd do that. I can't imagine they'd go to Camden Yards. I don't know. It's weird that
Camden
they haven't
Yards
announced.
Would be sweet. Camden Yards.
Of course
would
it would. It's the thing I've been lobbying for forever. But they're not going to do it. I'm not quite sure why they haven't announced it yet, though.
Camden Yards is a sensitive one for me. You know why? Because as a baseball fan, Camden Yards was the baseball stadium that was built right after Sky Dome. now called the Rogers Center. The big cavernous,
right.
This eggshell of nothing, yeah. Right? And it's like, that was the end of that model of baseball stadiums. And then Camden Yards was built, and everyone in Toronto went, oh, man, like, we could have had something like that instead.
Everybody in Toronto's like, oh, big deal. Where's your hotel in the outfield?
Where's the hotel with the two people humping at center field? You don't got that, do you? Check us out.
Yeah, but then Camden Yards begot a bunch of other stadiums that were sort of the law of diminishing returns, like traditional-looking ballparks that had these modern amenities. And Camden Yards, if you go there now, it does feel like a throwback. I mean, it feels like something that's been there since the 50s. Yeah. And that was the charm of that place. It wasn't simply just a throwback look inside of a thing with modern amenities. It was a complete throwback stadium. It's gorgeous. I'm going to Citi Field tonight to see the Mets, by the way, against the Cubs.
Hey,
so very excited to see that. All right, with that, let's give the question of the day. By the way,
just a good one.
So Dan Hamhuis, National Hockey League icon Dan Hamhuis. Will be honored by the town of Smithers. Now, the town of Smithers is interesting. Their logo is actually one of those mountain men using a giant horn or a hobbit smoking a giant pipe, one of the two. But I don't know. That's besides the point. Dan Hamhuis will be saluted by the town of Smithers, and he will be honored with Dan Hamhuis Way. A road, a portion of First Avenue between Toronto Street and Dogwood Park will be named for Dan Hamhuis, and his accomplishments as a role model for local youth and an ambassador for Smithers!
Mm-hmm.
For his outstanding contributions to the sport of hockey, the community, and the new fundraising campaign with a sign installation. The north end section of First Avenue will now be called Dan Hamhuis Way. Pretty exciting stuff, in my opinion.
It's pretty cool.
The question we have for you, of course, is, what are your National Hockey League roads? For example, I gave you, as an example, Dustin Byfuglien Way, which is a road that always seems to slow to a stop, even though it's ever-widening. Matt Riegler, old-timey road. Yeah, you could just use a horse and buggy, but we have Aston Martins and Teslas now.
It's not bad.
Carmen Jaramillo writes in, Jonathan Taves Avenue, straight, fast, well-maintained. The view is plain, but the asphalt was just replaced with solid gold. Very well done.
Oh, that is a good one. The other good one in that spirit, where's the one? Filibuster. Where's the one about?
Nick Davis, by the way. David Backus Boulevard, where you have to cross-check both ways before crossing the street.
Oh, here it is. Michael Palmer. Brodeur Boulevard. We have to avoid trapezoidal roadblocks every 180 feet.
Joe Pack chimes in with Kessel's cul-de-sac. That's just beyond the pale if you think about it.
It's funny. I was going to use cul-de-sac when a Brian Campbell Puck Daddy style-y.
Nice.
Thank you. Thought you'd enjoy that one. No, you got a little heat over that one.
I'm going to write about that in my book one day. Alexander Diggs Speedway, great prospect for a highway, but for some reason never got through development stages. Perfectly done.
Tyler, that's well done.
This is Clark Aitken, writes in, Tyler Bozak Avenue, where you hop on the back of a much better car and get all the credit for their driving. Great. Eric Stahl Avenue, this is from Section 328, where you have an Aston Martin, but the speed limit is 25.
Dude, everyone's missing the obvious one. It just dawned on me.
What's that?
Ryan Malone Highway.
Oh, with the white lines?
Just saying.
PHWA Parkway, where you drive on the left side. No, the right side. No, the left side. Little Ovechkin player. All-star humor. Obviously, Sheridan, Patrick Kane, Pike, 20 Cent Tolls. You know that.
Chris Kraft, Jonathan Taves Road seems nice, still isn't as good as Crosby Parkway. That's a good one.
Very good. And then finally, one that I really loved, and we might get back to these later on, but the one that I really loved, Where the hell is it? I need to find it real quick. You give me some dial-in music now as I find this one, because I don't want to...
Well, what our friend Greg Wyshynski is endeavoring to do right now is go through his timeline on Twitter. He is searching. He is like an anthropologist. He is putting on the hula skirt and eating the can of worms, trying to find that tweet that is going to be the crescendo, the precipice, the zenith, before we get to Ken Holland, GM of the Detroit Red Wings. Craig,
that's why he's a pro, ladies and gentlemen. The one I was looking for was Dandy Bradley. And this could go for any offensive player that gives you headaches, ladies and gentlemen. And that would be Martin Erat Circle. That's so good. Alexei Kovalev Circle.
Oh, Sergei Berezin
and so
Circle.
On.
Oh,
and
right
so
down
on and so forth.
Oh, that's good.
All right,
oh,
ladies and gentlemen, with that, let us get right to our guest after we do the thing that we do, which is start
do the, intro,
start the show proper.
Wait till Ken. Whoa!
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I'm going to take a pie in the face, sir. Now let me through.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a tax write-off. You get to throw a pie in my face and write it off for taxes.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Oh, cool. Let's get right to him. A man who has signed a contract extension to remain the man behind the year-after-year success of the Detroit Red Wings and a friend of this very podcast. He is, of course, Ken Holland, and he joins us now on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Congratulations, Kenny, on your new deal.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
You know, I kind of thought, Ken, that considering everyone else who either played for or was part of the Medicine Hat Tigers has gone to the Vancouver Canucks, it seems, this offseason, I thought that maybe down the road you'd be destined there.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. I've been here in Detroit since 1983 as a minor league goaltender and 85 as a scout. So 30-plus years, you obviously got roots and great ownership. Great hockey city, and very happy and honored to re-sign.
The one thing that's always, and that's the one thing that's always been said about your team, is the, you know, the fact that the management, the infrastructure, the ownership, all of it is there as a support system. What's the interaction like with the Ilitches? I mean, do you have to go get everything approved, or are they pretty much hands off? How does that relationship work for those of us who don't know?
I tell them everything, anything big. You know, contracts, I tell them in advance. Obviously, some of the moves you make on a day-to-day basis, we do it. But, they own the team, and I think they should know in advance about things that we want to do. And I try to give our ownership ample opportunity. If they are uncomfortable with something, that I've got some time to either explain what we're trying to do, or that we're in a position, that I'm in a position, got myself in a position where I can change course. Mr. Misilich own the team. It's their team. I work for them, and I need to, whenever I'm going to do something, I want to make sure that they know what we're doing and why we're doing it in advance of announcing it.
Speaking of business, Mike Babcock has always said he's going to wait for your extension until deciding on what he's going to do. Has there been discussions now that you've been signed up for another four, Ken? Anything moving with Mike Babcock?
No, and I talked to Mike the other day, and I said, you know, he's in Western Canada. I think it's best to do these types of things face-to-face. So when we get to Traverse City training camp in the middle of September, we'll sit down and talk. I know Mike's not concerned. I'm not concerned. I think from Mike's perspective, and I certainly understand it, you know, he's regarded as, if not the best, one of the best coaches in the league. He wants to make sure that when you get that opportunity, that you feel good about, you know, what you sign. And I think that our relationship goes back to 05. I hired him in 2005. You know, we've worked together for pushing 10 years, so we've got a great working relationship. We've also got a relationship away from the rink. So, I'm comfortable that he's going into the last year of the contract. I think from the outside, if you'd look, I think people I can understand why people have got, they start rumors or things start to swirl, but from my perspective, whether he signs in September or November or January or April or May, I don't know really what difference it makes. We got to find something that's fair for the team, and it's fair for Mike. Certainly, we've had conversations about extensions. I know Mike felt most comfortable waiting for me to get handled first. I've been handled now. In the next little while, Mike and I'll sit down.
There you go, and he will be paid handsomely. It's been interesting to see how you have handled the Daniel Alfredson availability this summer, as far as what his role with the team would be, as far as bringing him back, everything else. What's been your approach with Daniel, knowing that you do have a good collection of kids that are going to be looking for some ice time next season?
Well, you know, first off, Danny Alfie called me about a week before July 1st to let me know that, you know, he really would like to play hockey again. He felt good, but he didn't feel absolutely the way he wanted to feel heading to July 1st. So he said, you know, basically what we agreed to was that we were going to do whatever business we had to do in the summer. He's planning to live in Detroit this winter, whether he plays hockey or not. His family enjoyed last winter in Detroit, and they want to be in Detroit another winter. So we both agreed that let's wait until August, September, get to town, skate every day, and a couple days before camp, we'll talk. You know, we're in the process of going with some younger people, but those younger people have to beat out the older people. We're not just putting these jobs over to younger people because their birth certificate says that they're young. I've never done that. I don't believe in it. I believe that we're going to be a strong organization when the young players take these jobs away from the veteran players. You know, I think in Alfie's case, he was our leading scorer last year. Unfortunately, probably had 10, 15, 20, 15 games or thereabouts where his back affected his ability to play. So that's a conversation that we can have in the middle of September. But I thought Alfie was a great signing for us. And when we had Zetterberg and Datsyuk down after the Olympic break, Alfie, along with Cronwell, were leaders of the team. And that's one of the advantages of having a guy like Alfie in the locker room. He's been a captain. He's a leader. He's a competitor. He's respected by his teammates. So we'll see where he's at in the middle of September, and certainly if he's healthy, I know that he really, really wants to play, and I still think he's got some hockey left in him.
You know, one of those kids that I think Red Wings fans are pretty excited about, I believe the stat is 81 goals in 81 games when you factor in regular season and the Q and playoffs as well, Ken. That's Anthony Mantha. What do you expect of this young man this season?
Well, again, we're going to go to camp. Mike Babcock's going to put him on a line with either Pav or Z or you know, Nyquist or Tatar or France. He's going to put him on a line with offensive guys. We're going to give him some power play time, and then at the end of September, we're going to evaluate. You know, we're hoping he forces his way onto the team. I mean, everybody's looking for someone that can score goals, and Memphis certainly scored a lot of goals in junior. Pro's another level, and but we'll go to camp. We're going to give them every opportunity to make the team. And in the couple of days prior to the season, we'll make a decision whether he's played his way on or played his way to Grand Rapids.
And how is the Zetter back doing these days, a.k.a. Henrik Zetterberg's back? Is he all right?
Well, everything that I'm told is Z is doing great. He talked to Babs last week, Mike Babcock, and he told Mike that he's felt the best that he's felt in a long, long time in the off season. You know, I think that, you know, last year we had six guys that played half the year: Eriksson, Helm, Weiss, Franson, Zetterberg, and Datsyuk. That's a big part of our team, a big part of our offense, and Eriksson's our top pair with Cronwell. So, you know, everything that I've heard all summer about all those players is positive. But, you know, let's get to the training camp and let's start to push and skate every day and see how they feel. But certainly, we'd like to get to the home opener against Boston, the season opener, and have most of our lineup intact and see what we've got. You know, I tried to do some things July 1st. I wasn't able to do some things. I look at our team. We had 93 points. We had a half the year out of those six guys. It allowed guys like Nyquist and Tatar and Yurko and Sheehan on defense, DeKaiser and Brendan Smith to really, that was their, for the most part, their first year pro. I'm hoping if we can have good health or relatively good health with many of those guys that we've talked about that were injured, and with the development of our young kids, that we're going to be able to roll four lines. We're going to have some secondary scoring. That's what we've really struggled with the last couple of years is, you know, trying to score some goals. So I'm hoping that we're able to roll four lines that can all pitch in. But part of that, again, is you can't have four and five and six guys out on a regular basis. I know you're going to have injuries. Injuries are a part of the game. We just seem to have for about a 2 month period from the beginning of December, really till the end of coming out of the Olympic break or going into the Olympic break in early February for 2 months and a little bit more. It was many games. We had four, five, six, seven guys down at one point in time. It's hard to win consistently when you've got that many people out night after night after night. I thought we did a great job of treading water. We basically, if you looked at our season, it was 14-7-7 till early December, seven games over 500 in a third of the year. We basically played 500 hockey for 2 months, nine weeks, and then come out of the Olympic break, I think we played five or six games over 500. So when we had people, we played 10, 11, 12, 13 games over 500. When we had the injuries, we played 500. So, you know, we're hoping the adversity we went through is going to pay dividends this year.
Yeah, I can remember, Ken, I think it was 99 or maybe 2000. I want to ask you about the Traverse City Camp and tournament. I remember going there and being completely blown away by Pavel Datsyuk, who at that time was a very young man. But the things that he could do with the puck blew my mind. Has there been one guy during this camp since you've been running the Red Wings that's really dropped your jaw? Maybe Pavel Datsyuk is that guy. But is there, when you look at this Traverse City Camp, is there one guy that springs to mind for you?
Well, I mean, obviously, Pav. I mean, anybody that can, you know, there's very few people in the league that one-on-one can has the ability at the right time and the right to undress somebody. Pav's one of those people. But on top of that, you know, that's what I think, you know, the fans see on the highlight or the great pass. I see a guy that plays 200 feet, you know, every night when we turn over the puck, he's back checking hard. He competes 200 feet. We're lucky. So does Zetterberg. They really set the standard for our players. And, you know, that's how we've been able to, I guess, whatever success we've had, it's really come from the top, going back to the mid-90s with Yzerman and Fedorov and Lidstrom. And it was passed on to the next generation of players. So, you know, that's what we need our young players to do. They're great role models, but certainly Pav is a guy that can take, he's one of the few players in the National Hockey League that when you go to a game, I would pay money just to watch Pav play. He can bring you out of your seat and do things that most people can't.
He's a magician. It's crazy. He has Jedi powers or something to be able to do what he does with the puck. Kenny, whenever we have you on this podcast, I always like to pick your brain on rules changes and innovations in the game because you are one of the leading voices when it comes to these discussions. The AHL has approved a number of sort of guinea pig rules changes they're going to be testing out this year, and one of them is, in fact, the 4-on-4 and then the 3-on-3 in overtime. And what do you think about that format and its viability maybe for the NHL?
Well, I'm excited to see it. What they've done is it's seven minutes of overtime. The first 4 minutes is 4-on-4, but they're going to go to 3-on-3 after the first whistle. They're not going to blow it after 4 minutes. First whistle after 4 minutes, they're going to go to 3-on-3. So I'm excited to see it. It's 7 minutes versus 5 minutes. My push again has been to, have more games decided in overtime. Certainly, I know if you can't decide it in overtime, we got to go to a shootout. In this day and age, you know, the ties where we end up 2-2 and we go home. That's yesteryear. You know, so hopefully a couple more minutes and they're also gonna, you know, what we're doing at the NHL when 60 minutes is over, they're gonna dry scrape the ice. You know, so you're gonna get a better sheet of ice. I know in the NHL we're going to switch ends. I'm not sure in the American League, but if you switch ends, you have a dry sheet of ice or a clean sheet of ice. You got 7 minutes. You got 3 minutes of 3-on-3. I just think that a higher percentage of your games are going to be decided in overtime, and if you can't decide the game, then you go to a shootout to decide the game.
Ken, last one from this microphone, and thanks for your time. This comes from a listener, Ben Matheson, who submits, and I've actually been curious about this as well, too. If you have a chance, ask Ken Holland about his days with the Broom Dusters, always been curious about his time in Binghamton. Two-part question, your thoughts on playing in Binghamton years ago, and was Paul Stewart on your team when you played there?
Paul Stewart was on my team, fabulous. I played 6 of my 9 years in Binghamton, fabulous years that I would... love to go back. I mean, we were young playing hockey. The building was full my first year, 48-55, sold out every night. Stewie was on our team. A lot of will, a lot of determination. Defenseman could play a little bit left wing, but great years. Had 6 great years. Have some people there that are really good friends going back, right up to now. One of our daughters was born there. Julie was born in Binghamton in 1983. So great memories, and love my time in Binghamton with the Broom Dusters.
Ken Holland, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. Hope your summer is going well, and hope that when that Babcock contract comes down that you're able to keep him in Detroit for a great number of years and
thank
not
you.
Have him poached by those evil people in Toronto. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Holland, GM of the Detroit Red Wings. I want Ken to re-sign Mike Babcock just to, I don't know, quiet down everybody in Toronto about, oh yeah, we're holding off on the Randy decision until Mike Babcock is available.
Because if Mike said that. Yes. If Mike said yes, you know what they'd do? They'd clear out all of those statues they're putting on that bench and just have
Sorry,
him behind it.
Sorry, Teeter. Sorry, bud. Back up. You're going Mike Babcock.
What do you think of that statue, by the way? I think it's pretty cool, personally.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, these types of things are long overdue for Toronto. They've understood why Toronto's the one market that's never had it. But listen, Teeter Kennedy's a great one. I really hope. This is going to sound horrible, but I mean, he's an older gentleman now. I really hope that they get around to doing Johnny Bauer while he's still alive. Because for my money, Johnny Bauer is the most popular Maple Leaf of all time. Like, there's a crew that loves Matt Sundin. There's a generation. This generation loves Dougie and Wendell and Davey Keon, Daryl, like all these guys, Teeter, right? You go back. But when you look cross-generationally, like there's a video they play at the Air Canada Centre, which is a Johnny Bauer highlight collage of him getting, you know, pucks in the face and making saves and punching Montreal Canadiens guys. if from like the age of what, 5 to 90, everybody, when they do that tight one shot of Johnny Bauer sitting there waving to the crowd after they show that video, the man is universally adored. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how long you've been a Maple Leaf fan, how many games you've gone to. He is the most generous, like thoughtful, popular, genuine guy and fun guy you will ever meet in your life. And if you ever get a chance to read the book, by the way, Bob Duff is one of the, I think might be the only author of the Windsor Star, a great guy and a wonderful book. If you get a chance to read The China Wall, which is the Johnny Bauer story, please, by all means, check it out. But I would hope that, I know they want to do some guys that have passed on, and I get that, but I just hope that they end up getting around to Johnny Bauer while he's still alive. They don't just go and do all the Maple Leafs that have passed on and sort of ignore the guys that are there still. John Bauer, ladies and gentlemen. John Bauer.
John Bauer, ladies and gentlemen.
John Bauer.
And actually, like I said in the post I wrote about it, like I'm totally down with the statue instead of those creepy-ass banners they put up at the top of the ACC. I'm sorry. Like I know that not everybody gets the same effect, but when you're sitting in the press box in the ACC and every time you look up, King Clancy is staring through your skull with his death stare, it's not a thing to really celebrate.
I kind of like those. I kind of dig those, especially the Barilko one. So I always got to think about Bill Barilko, so I always dug that.
Eric Clam writes in, the Cal Clutterbuck Turnpike, the number of collisions strangely increases as the road passes through Minnesota.
Really good.
Our listeners are the best sometimes, man.
I know. It's
awesome. Really funny.
I do it just like so I can.
And then Justin Soli writes in, Rick DiPietrode, a super modern technology paid for with little foresight, eventually leading to a tragic number of crashes and shut down within a decade, cutting everyone's losses.
Wow.
Wow.
DPH Road.
Ouch, man.
Hey, real quick before Game Show Friday, I know a lot of people are freaking out because Extra Skater is down today. Everybody's a favorite advanced stats site. Within a close proximity to me writing about the NHL trying to shut down sites like Extra Skater. Look, I don't know what the deal is. I reached out to Daryl Metcalf, who's the creator of Extra Skater, and to pull the curtain back, when I wrote this story about the NHL, I spoke to the NHL's legal department about the terms of service change. I reached out to some stats bloggers, including Gabe Desjardins, who spoke on the record for the story, and I reached out to Daryl, who declined comment for the story. And I got the sense that maybe it wasn't something he really wanted to dabble in because he's a little bit worried about the NHL actually coming after him. So I don't know if this is an after effect of that or if there's something else. I do know that there is a number of people out there in the stats community that are going to get paid courtesy of the Jackie Robinson of stats bloggers being hired, Tyler Dello. There's a number of stats guys out there that right now are in discussions with NHL teams and are going to get paid.
Yeah.
And maybe Daryl's one of them. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I know one person that we both know is on track to be hired by an NHL team. I can't say who it is right now, but it's somebody who, when it happens, his name will be quite apparent, and you will know it. So there's a number of guys that are in this game that are being gobbled up right now because this is the thing that is happening in the NHL, and good for them. I hope that all of our friends get paid massive amounts of money. And then I hope that when in 3 years they decide to leave these teams, the stories they tell make our minds blown about all of the pushback they got from the old guard up the chain of command and how frustrating it was to try to push these new ideas through when Kevin Lowe says, "Why would we want to do that? He's got grit."
He plays with heart. What are you doing? Okay, this is a message to every single analytics blogger who is going to get gobbled up by an NHL team. Everybody else, go get a drink. Come back with Game Show Friday here in a couple of seconds, but I want to speak to these bloggers specifically. Okay, listen, you, guy, girl, you're going to get hired by an NHL team. You're going to be privy to a lot of information that other people are not privy to. When you get there, right, do your job, do it well. I hope that you're all successful and have wonderful careers. The one thing I would encourage all of you to do is, at the end of every day, write down what happened. Because there are going to be some amazing hockey books that are poised to be written by some people whose entry point, whose diving board is analytics. And this is a hole in the marketplace that has become pretty obvious. And some of you fine young men, or older men, younger women, older women, are about to fill that void. If I can offer you anything, please write down everything. And then, to Greg's point, when they kick your ass to the curb, write a book. And you know what? The easiest thing to do is write the book as you go along. So as you get fired, you turn around to a publisher or just self-publish it. It is a digital age, ladies and gentlemen. Do we need publishing companies? Sorry, our friends.
Yeah, it's like how Ruby's reading a book about one of the villains in The Bachelor who wrote the book, you know, within a reasonable proximity of her being voted off The Bachelor. So there you go.
Do it.
Always be writing.
Do it. Always be writing. By the way, as everyone keeps reminding us, even though Extra Skater is down, if Extra Skater has been gobbled up by some entity, I hope it's the NHL. I hope the NHL is going to do Extra Skater on NHL.com. I reached out to someone at the NHL today to find out if it's true, but I didn't get a response. So we'll see.
It could be a giant media conglomerate like your TSN or your Sportsnet that gobbles up Extra
Skater. It might. Who knows? By the way, Behind the Net is still working, just so everyone knows.
Also, I didn't
analytics on the internet.
The one site that I always thought would get gobbled up would be CapGeek. I thought that somebody would definitely buy CapGeek at some point. As far as
Matthew Wiest ain't selling out, yo.
Yet. Right?
As Ted DiBiase told us once, everybody has a price.
Indeed. See, that's right. So, you know, look for Matthew Wiest to be lying on the ground with paper money stuff in his mouth at some point, and Cat Geek to be hosted someplace else. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now for a Friday favorite.
It's Game Show Friday!
Joining us now for yet another revamped iteration of Game Show Friday is Allison Bickford, who joins us on the Merrick Wyszynski podcast. Hello, Allison. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing
Allison.
Awesome. So Allison heeded our call from last week in which we said we would pick somebody for Game Show Friday and then collect from them what they'd like to be asked about in our never-ending quest to hone and perfect the format of this beloved Friday institution. So Allison wrote in and she said that she'd like to volunteer herself as tomorrow's contestant in a college hockey-themed edition of Game Show Friday.
When you think college hockey, you think Jeff Merrick, right?
I was feeling a lot more confident until I found out you were doing the questions.
My knowledge of college hockey is nowhere close to CHL, trust me.
It does appear she's got some bone to pick with Merrick. In her email, she writes, "My company goes back to full-day Fridays at the end of August, so my ability to participate becomes more difficult, and with Merrick's vendetta against the segment, I feel no guarantees the Game Show Friday lasts until next summer."
I'm just one lone voice here, though, Allison, you understand. I think eventually what Game Show Friday is going to become is we just pick contestants and then we ask them questions about themselves, Greg. Like, hey, Allison, what color are your eyes? Hey, you know what color your eyes are. Congratulations. You're one for one.
So we're going to turn it into the casino from Vegas Vacation where they've lost all their money in Vegas. They have to go to the budget discount casino and it's games like guess the number and shoots and ladders. Yeah. We're just going to bring it down to that level.
What are you gonna get to here?
Allison, are you a Devils fan?
I'm a huge Devils fan.
What do you think the most disappointing moment in Devils history is? I'm writing today's Summer of Disappointment story for Puck Daddy, and I have one, and I think it might be the most contentious one of my choices. But if you had to say the most disappointing moment in Devils history, what do you think it would be?
I think for me it's when Parisi left. He was my favorite.
Oh, it was
heartbreaking when he decided to peace out. So I think that's probably my disappointing moment.
That's not a bad one, and I do make reference of it in that. I'll tell you what it is for me. My most disappointing moment in Devils history was not the Matteau goal, because we should be over that by now with the three cups and the Henrique thing in 2002 and 2012, the whole thing. Not Kovalchuk leaving, because it gets us out of cap recapture, and not Parise leaving, even though that was really disappointing. It's when Niedermeyer left. Because Niedermeyer left... Yeah, year after the lockout, year when Stevens was obviously heading towards retirement, had a chance to grab the mantle of being the franchise defenseman. And then the Devils – Merrick, I looked it up. You know what the Devils offered Scott Niedermeyer annual salary to stay in New Jersey?
How much?
$7.8 million a season to stay in Jersey for five years. $7.8 million over 5 years. But alas, they did not have one thing that they needed to seal that deal, which was
Rob
Niedermeyer.
Right. didn't have the brother.
They were a couple years late getting Rob.
They were a couple years late, right. So I think Scotty leaving was the biggest blow and most disappointing moment. Because, I mean, he had been groomed to be the guy after Stevens was retired. But then right when the Devils needed him the most, he shanghaied him and left for the Ducks and then won a cup.
Wasn't Wayne Gretzky sticking up for his buddy Ron Lowe kind of one of the biggest, pardon the pun, low moments of the Devils?
The Mickey Mouse moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question about that. That doesn't end up on my list anywhere, but it's definitely
Wayne, the great one calls the organization Mickey Mouse.
I got a solid list here, sir. You're gonna like it. You'll like it too, Allison. Allison, I don't know if you're gonna like playing game. I don't know if you're gonna like playing Game Show Friday though, because Merrick has the helm.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna love this, Allison. You're gonna love this. This is gonna be a lot of fun.
You know, so it's all college hockey edition, right?
Yeah, and specifically most of the question, because you're a Hockey East girl, right? Allison, are you still there? Did we lose Allison?
Allison,
I'm getting a lot of noise. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, you still are. Do we have you? Okay, we got you.
Yeah, I got some strange noise in my ear, but...
It's called my voice. I mean, geez, I know it's a little bit nasally and not really that great, but I mean, it's going to be a little more polite. It's the first time we met. Thanks, Allison.
Hey, this is the second time we've met, sort of.
Oh, hang on.
In Chicago. Yeah.
Okay, we had an awesome conversation in Chicago then. What's the name of that bar? That was a cool bar.
Public House, I think.
That's it. That's right. I was here with my brother-in-law, Tracy Myers. Adam Kempinar from the Hawks was there. Okay, I'm going to be really nice to you then, Allison, because you had a lovely conversation.
Nice, easy questions.
All right, nice. Okay, what color are your eyes?
Brown.
You're one for one. Look at you go. Okay, hang on. Here we go. Okay, so you're a hockey East girl, right, Allison?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, so most of these questions are Hockey East. One of them, as a University of New Hampshire girl, is going to sting a little bit, but we'll get there. Anyway, let us begin, and I hope that both Ryan Lambert is listening and our good friend Nate Ewell listening as well, because a lot of these questions revolve around one of my favorite things in NCAA hockey. And you know what that is, Allison?
Frozen Four?
Players decommitting and going to the CHL. All right, in that spirit... question number one. I left Boston University to play with the St. John Sea Dogs of the QMJHL. I now play with the Minnesota Wild. Who am I?
Boston University Wild. Mm-hmm. There's so many college guys on that Wild team.
He left after, I want to say, like 25 games. Some say it may have been due to academics. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I can think of every other college guy on that Wild team.
His initials may be CC.
Charlie Coyle?
Charlie Coyle is right. We'll give it to you. You're a 1-for-1 so far. See how easy it is? Your eyes are brown. You're 1-for-1. Allison Bickford is on her way. Now, Charlie Coyle, this is where it gets a little more tricky. Charlie Coyle wears number 3, and that's odd for a forward. It's a low number. That's normally reserved for defensemen. Why does Charlie Coyle wear number 3?
I have no idea why Charlie Coyle wears number 3.
Okay, let me make it a little bit easier. Charlie Coyle wears number 3 because his cousin wore number 3 at Boston University. His cousin was a former NHLer as well. He played with, amongst other teams, Chicago.
I have no idea.
His name is Tony Amonti. He is the cousin of Charlie Coyle, and that's why Charlie Coyle wears numéro 3.
Other things you learn on this show. I had no idea about that either.
It's a very educational program here, yes.
Was that an official question?
That was an official question. So you're 1-for-2 so far. Don't worry, we're getting there. Okay, Hockey East. We love it. We love it. I left Northeastern after one season to play with Saginaw and Niagara of the OHL. I am a 6'7" first-round draft pick of the Dallas Stars. I play defense. Who am I?
Tara was drafted by the Islanders, wasn't he? So I don't think it's him.
Nope.
And I don't think he went to college.
Plays with the Texas Stars.
Although maybe he went to college, but not. Yes,
won the Calder Cup with the Texas Stars this past season. Big defenseman. 6'7". 1 year at Northeastern.
I should know this because he would have been there when I was watching. I don't know.
His first name may be Jamie.
Nope, I got nothing.
Jamie Oleksiak, 6'7".
Oleksiak.
Jamie Oleksiak. All right. Okay. Let's have some fun with this one. Hey, you know that big rivalry between UNH and Maine?
I am familiar with it.
Yeah. Now, this one may sting, but nonetheless. Maine fans, what do they call UNH? What does it stand for them?
University of New Hardware.
University of No Hardware, and you are 2-in. UNH.
Merrick told me, as you know, I'm kind of like a casual NCAA fan. Like, I'm somebody who'll watch the Frozen Four and dip into some rivalries and stuff now and again. I nearly spit coffee when Merrick told me that one this morning. I was really impressed by it.
Yeah,
we unfortunately call ourselves that too. We can't our hats on much. We've come close, but no.
You should just call New Hampshire what everybody else calls it, Allison, and that's the country club. Now, we move on. Okay, I'm going to go around the block for this one. 1985, Bob Froese and Pelly Lindbergh of the Philadelphia Flyers were the first NHLers to do what? Yes, put water bottles on top of the net, but they weren't actually the first to do that in the history of the game. It was a pair of goaltenders, Hockey East Tournament Final 1985, and both goaltenders did it in a double OT thriller. Either name me one of the two goalies or one of the two Hockey East teams that were in that final.
In case you were worried there wouldn't be any Merrickian questions in this game show Friday, please tell us who the first goalies to put water bottles on top of the nets are.
Bob Froese and Pelly Lindbergh. Come on, we all know that.
Oh, man. I mean, if you want to guess the Hockey East championship team, it's probably always safe to go Boston College.
You are right.
Ah, right.
Boston College
was
one of them. It was Boston College against Providence. It was a double OT thriller. Steve Rooney with the goal wins it for the Friars. Can you name either of the goaltenders, by the way? As a New Jersey fan, you should get one.
Well, that makes it a little bit easier. I'm gonna go with Terreri.
Chris Terreri for Providence.
All right.
And the other one.
I love me some Chris Terreri.
I know.
Chris Terreri was your classic American Hasekian goalie who flopped around, made amazing saves, got about Dickens squat for goal support when he played. But but of course, his most famous moment, as we know Devils fans, was when he was on stage during the 95 Cup celebration held in a parking lot, dancing around with a Nashville No Way sign. And endearing himself forever to Devils fans who were worried that our beloved hockey heroes would Shanghai the state after winning the cup for the comfy environs of Nashville.
Yeah, BC goalie, by the way, then was, hello Islanders fans, Scott Gordon was a goaltender.
Oh!
Record. Yeah, Scott Gordon.
Once and future head coach in the National Hockey League, Scott Gordon.
Yeah, he'll be back.
Oh, totally.
He will. Okay, back to another one of my favorite topics. Decommitting. From Division One. Okay, this defenseman decommitted from Notre Dame to play with the Windsor Spitfires of the Ontario Hockey League. He is a smooth skater. Wish mentioned Scott Niedermeyer a moment ago. He skates like him. He is a first-round pick of the Anaheim Ducks and is currently toiling on the blue line for that team. Who is this young man?
Oh, I'm going to go with Cam Fowler.
You are correct. Cam Fowler saw the light and said no to Notre Dame and yes to the Windsor Spitfires. And look at him now, wealthy beyond his wildest dreams and starring for the Anaheim Ducks.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 for 6. What do you got to get again, Wish? Is it 6? 6 out of 10?
We demanded the average, correct, Amundo. Where is she now?
All right. She got 4. 4 out of 6,
right,
man. Allison's rocking it. Oh. Allison's doing it.
I have to say, though, I'm more offended by guys who leave college early than those who just run off to major junior. But that's a sore spot.
How dare you disparage Kyle Okposo like that?
Striking a blow for all that is good and holy in American hockey. There you go, Allison.
Okay, we'll see what happens with Zach Werenski in Michigan this year. Okay, we move along. Kevin Hayes. Hey, here's a big name this weekend. He's poised to become a UFA on Saturday if Chicago doesn't sign him. All indications are they won't. Now, he played at BC last year.
Yep.
Can you name his two line mates?
I can, because I watched them get beat by my sister's Union College boys. I told her I'd give her a shout out. And that would be Mr. Goudreau and Bill Arnold.
You are correct. Currently toiling for the Calgary Flames. Speculation is maybe Calgary makes a play and reunites that powerhouse line from Boston College last season. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You only need to get one more.
All right.
Only need to get one more. Make it. Okay. Okay, let's throw America.
By good here. One, I mean nice, easy one about New Hampshire.
No, I think I've run out of country club questions. Unless you want to ask me something like, where did James Van Riemsdyk play? But, I mean, that's kind of
simple.
That's a good one, yeah, because you can get that one, so you ain't going to get that. hey, we go back to Anaheim again. This goaltender, hey, everyone's favorite topic, this goaltender decommitted from the University of Michigan, late, I might add, to play with the Kitchener Rangers of the OHL. You saw him in the playoffs last year for the Anaheim Ducks, albeit briefly. Who is this U.S. stellar goaltender who once upon a time felled Team Canada at the U-20s?
I believe that would be John Gibson.
And with that, you have won Game Show Friday. That was indeed John Gibson. Yeah, well done, Allison Bickford. The other ones that I had, I mean, one's a tricky one, which is New York Rangers pick officially became a member of the Niagara Ice Dogs yesterday after committing to play with North Dakota, or NODAC as the hip kids call it, in 2012. Who is this stud defenseman?
Not sure I would have gotten that
Joe
one.
Finley.
Ryan Mantha. Very good wish, yes. No, it's Ryan Mantha, nephew of Mo Mantha.
Did Ryan Mantha ever throw a ever throw a lawnmower off a roof like Joe Finley did? Because if not,
I can either confirm or deny. No, I know. And the other one, and I asked you to do this off the top of your head, and Allie, you probably can. Give me the last four winners of the Frozen Four.
Ooh, the last four. So I got my Union, Yale.
Yep.
I know BC is in there, but I think they were 4 years ago.
No, you got it. No. There were three. And BC and.
I think it's one of those Midwestern schools. I'm going to go with St. Cloud.
If by St. Cloud you mean Minnesota Duluth, you are right.
Yeah, that's
way to go, Allison Bickford. Congratulations.
Hey, Allison. Congratulations is in order. Is there one college that you absolutely hate? One college program you absolutely hate in the NCAA? I don't mean like,
yeah,
and
Maine.
Here's the thing.
Come on,
I don't mean like a direct. I don't mean a direct rival like Maine. I mean, is there anyone, say, west of the Northeast that you hate? That's not a conference rival.
For a while, we didn't like North Dakota, but we got our revenge in 2009. I don't know if there's one team further west that I hate.
And is there one team's mascot and or jersey that you covet as an NCAA hockey fan?
Let me think here. Those UMD Bulldogs are pretty nice. As much as I've heard Chico talk about them.
Yep, that's true. That's true. I have to admit that I kind of like, and I hate admitting it, Vermont's chosen mascot.
The other cats, as we call them.
The fake cats. The other cats.
The other cats.
NCAA hockey, man. Like, do you think, hey, Allison, for reals, like, you listen to the podcast, you read the blog. Should we do more on NCAA hockey? Is there an underserved population that we don't know about that we need to maybe have a little bit more NCAA talk on the show and stuff?
100%. I think I never really followed college hockey until I got to UNH, and then I absolutely fell in love. It's an amazing group, and I mean, you get so many guys who probably won't move on to the next level and who are just in it because they love the game, and I would love to see more about it on the blog.
And Allison, if Merrick and I did a tour stop at the University of New Hampshire, how many people do you think would show up if we did a live appearance?
I would fly
Allison
from
and her
Chicago
sister, that's it.
To Durham, so you would have at least one. But I would imagine you get a pretty good group. There's some
you
hockey
think a good
diehards
group?
Up there.
If we held it at a bar in Portsmouth, because I stayed in Portsmouth. Last year on the way to Maine, and really fell in love with it, little burg. It was a nice little town. It's a nice little drinking town for
it's
those.
It's a good spot. There's not much else to do. UNH hockey and drinking is the two main pastimes.
Yeah.
I hate drinking. What is this, Northern
Portland,
Manitoba?
It was on my way to Portland, Maine, which is one of my favorite cities. To hang out in.
I was in Maine last weekend for my college roommate's wedding.
No kidding.
I was up in Bangor, so a little bit further north, but.
Bangor. That's what Tipper used to do. Listen, Allison, you were an amazing guest on the podcast. Once again, I think you struck a. It took you a second. Once again, you struck a blow for the forces of good and light by winning Game Show Friday and showing Merrick that, in fact, the gimmick does work flawlessly when we have a perfect marriage of contestant and subject matter.
I love the new layout where we get to pick the answer, because if I had gotten 1970s junior hockey, I would not have done as well.
Yeah, exactly.
How dare you? You don't want to hear about the new Westminster Bruins? You don't want to hear about Sangster's Gangsters out in Seattle? I mean, come on. This is legendary stuff.
Hey, as a college hockey fan, junior hockey is my enemy. All these guys.
Only when we steal your athletes. Thank
like,
you very much.
It doesn't have to be like that. Listen, Allison. Junior hockey is our friend now because we're so good at it. I mean, if we were terrible at it now, we would hate it. But
you know what?
Now that the Americans have become the gold standard in junior hockey, I think we should embrace junior hockey.
You know what? Wish is absolutely right. And you know what? Today in the semifinal at the Ivan Holenka, which is the U18 tournament, where every player is available, unlike
the
other
U18,
a lot of the Right, where a lot of the Canadian kids aren't available to play towards the end of the year because their season is going on. So when the playing field is level, at this year's U18, in the semifinal, USA and Canada actually played today. Let me just go to the website. 11-5 was the final. Did you see this, Wish? 11-5?
I did not see that.
Who do you think won? Who do you think won today? Who do you think won 11-5, Canada or United States?
The United States.
If by United States you mean Kanakistan, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Dylan Strome lit him up. Lawson Krause was fantastic. Oh, yeah. 11-5. This is a game right out of 1978. I know. Last time I checked, Czechs were up 2-1 against Sweden. But anyway, yes, U.S. dominates junior. Anyway, continue.
Thank you so much, Allison, for joining us. By the way, we'd love to pass on messages from listener to listener. Eric Wood writes in and says that he remembers meeting you at the meetup with Merrick. It's cool seeing a Devils fan in Chicago. He was the Blackhawks fan dating the Blues fan at that meetup. And to say hi, do you remember Eric at all, Allison, or,
yes.
or not?
I remember
Eric, and we are constantly tweeting, although I have to say I tweet more with his girlfriend because we constantly debated trade talks for TJ Oshie to the Devils. If only Philly
TJ Oshie to the Devils,
here.
Eh?
Nice. I will give up a lot.
I don't know. He was. Listen. Obviously, there's a need for TJ Oshie on the Devils. I mean, a little bit. He does serve a certain purpose.
I only need him for that. I don't need anything else.
Yeah, only for that.
Just
right.
the shootout.
Put the Russians in their place.
That dude is great, by the way. He drove up from St. Louis just to come and say hi and have a beer with us that day. That fateful was it Saturday? That was a Saturday, right, Allie? That's Saturday in Chicago. Or was it Friday? No, it was Saturday. It was a Saturday. Yeah, that's a good time. That's a great weekend. I'm going to meet some awesome people, man, including Allison Bickford, winner of Game Show Friday this week. Actually, and if you want, I've got the Goaltenders Union book. I got an extra copy of it this week, the Greg Oliver book. So if you want that, I will tuck it aside for you, Allison. How about that?
Sure. That sounds awesome.
You can learn all about goaltenders.
All right. Allison, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for playing Games for Friday. We will catch up
Thanks
with you down the line.
Absolutely. See you guys later.
Thanks, Alec. That is one, by the way, Wish. Super cool chick. Her and I had the best conversation. She just kind of showed up and just sat beside me, and we just started talking. Like, super fantastic.
Section 328 writes in, instead of Game Show Friday, what about a Merrick vs. Brzezinski missed connection segment? What you're getting at is whether we should ever do a hockey dating game or that sort of thing. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I also think that it's something that we would probably do at a live show and not on the air because I don't know if there's an effective way to do it on the air. But it would have to take a backseat to the eventual hockey feud that I want to do if we ever have a live show. And there you go. We'll do more college
Survey
hockey.
Says.
There's an audience for it, and we do our best to try to get it on when we can. But yeah, it's tough because like I think there has been an undeniable surge in popularity for NCAA hockey. I don't know if it's there quite yet as a must listen to or must be part of the hockey experience.
Let me ask you.
I only say that knowing the traffic that we get. For the traffic that we get on Puck Daddy for our NCAA coverage, honestly, kind of mirrors my own interest in the sport as a casual fan. Like, occasionally some stories come up, they get covered. If there's some quirky shit that happens, it gets a lot of traffic. The interviews that we do do okay. The Frozen Four stuff that we do does really, really well. So I think there's still not a terrible amount of interest in regular season stuff before we get into the Frozen Four and the postseason tournaments and stuff like that.
You know, when John Shannon ran Leafs TV, what he would do is every week, Saturday and Sunday, they'd show NCAA games, and I loved it. Like, we don't have access to that where I am right now anymore. But of course, it's a recruiting tool. Get that product in this marketplace, compete for the kids that are making the decision between CHL and NCAA, and I get that. But they're just freaking great games and a chance to watch players that otherwise I would never get a chance to, watch. That's one of the things that I lament about what has become of Leafs TV is they don't show those college games anymore. They got rid of all their editorial programming and they got rid of all the NCAA games, which were fantastic, which were great. Now, here's my question to you. Yahoo does easily the world's leading junior hockey blog, Buzzing the Net. Nate Sager, Sanaya Superju, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
For
like,
sure.
That is industry standard. Do you think Yahoo would have the interest? Would it make sense to do a buzzing the nets, but for NCAA hockey?
That's a good question. We've actually talked about that before, whether there would be an audience for it, whether we should. I think it would do well. It might be something that we revisit. But buzzing the net's amazing. They do such a great job covering all aspects of junior hockey, to the point where sometimes I get angry at them for doing stories before we get a chance to do them. But Nate's awesome, and Tanaya's awesome, so I have no problem with that. And I'll be seeing those guys up in Toronto next month. I've asked about Toronto and venues and things like that. Plans are still being formulated. I can tell you that we're trying to work out something to see if something will work on that weekend of like the 20-something towards the end of September and see what happens there. But we'll let you know when it happens, because it could be a lot of fun. And that's it for the show and for the week. Oh, one more note, and I hate to end on a downbeat, but we should mention that it's been reported that Al Arbor, to tie it back to the Islanders dynasty, is dealing with dementia. Arbor... Arbor is a legend, an absolute legend, an absolute pillar of this game. I had the chance to meet him and talk to him at the Hall of Fame the year Rod Langway got inducted, and got a chance to say something to him that you don't get a chance to say to a lot of people, which is, you know, what he did with that Islanders team and what it meant to my dad. Who was an Islanders super fan before he saw the light and became a Devils fan. And just really, I mean, like, one of the first hockey things I ever saw as a kid, even before I saw a game, was a giant poster of a Bill Gallo cartoon in the New York Daily News celebrating the Islanders' four cups, and had all of these sketch drawings of the players' faces and their names, and Al Arbor kind of right in the middle of the whole thing along with Bill Torrey. And just got a chance to talk hockey and thank him for you know what he did with the Islanders and what it meant to my dad. And you know, saddened today to read that news about him, because he was a great man. And you know, obviously when he came back for that cameo appearance of the Islanders to get the record, or to round out the number, I forget what it was, when wasn't exactly looking like the best of health. But saddened to hear about him today.
Yeah, and he was, if you talk to anyone who ever played for him, and the one that I'm closest to and I used to talk to all the time about him was Kelly Rudy. But if you talk to anyone who was ever coached by Al Arbor, they all sing from the song, the same hymn book, that this guy was salt of the earth. Like, he knew when to lean on a guy, when to back off, how to motivate a guy, how to motivate a team. And I'll tell you what, in the entire history of the game, I don't know that I've ever seen a better battery of coach to general manager and back and forth than Al Arbor and Bill Torrey. To me, that was like, have you ever seen an era where two men, one holding the position of coach, the other holding the position of GM, have been more in sync than Al Arbor and Bill Torrey? Because if you have, I haven't. Like, that to me was like the perfect marriage. And I'm like you. I was sad to see the news about Al Arbor, because when you look at those Islanders teams, for me, that was, like, if I look at the history of the game, that was probably my favorite team to watch of all time, because that team could play it whichever way you wanted it. They had all the skill in the world. They had all the toughness in the world. They were dirty. I mean, sure, they had their share of, you know, Gary Howitz, and even their goaltender, Hall of Famer Billy Smith, was a nasty bit of business. But that team could play any single way that you wanted. Want to play a skill game? That's cool. Want to play a rough game? That's fine. Want to play a rush game? That's cool. You want to play a 2-1 defensive game? We can play that way. There was that collection of talent. That was probably that Al Arbor coach Islanders team was probably my favorite team of all time to watch. If I can actually double down on your ending the show on a downer this week wish, Frank Gudvari passed away yesterday. Frank Gudvari was one of the legendary referees in the game. In the 40s and 50s, this guy was given all the tough assignments. Like, this guy, like, if there was a big game and it was going to be rough, Frank Gudvari was the official. He was the official in the game that turned into the Richard Riot, which was the game in 1955 between the Montreal Canadiens and the Detroit Red Wings. Sorry, the game that led to the Richard Riot, rather. Sorry, the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens. And he was responsible for handling all the big assignments for the NHL, and he used to also head up the NHL official schools, and discovered NHL officials like Kerry Fraser, Bob Hodges, went through that program as well. Anyway, Frank Gudvari passed away yesterday in Kitchener, so the referee fraternity as well loses one of their great ones. And if you're a fan of hockey photography, and a lot of this was captured by my favorite hockey photographer of all time, Nat Turovsky. If you want to just type in, probably on Google Images, you can find a bunch. Frank Gudvari plus Turovsky, and the Hall of Fame would have a bunch of these as well. Some of the most candid photos of this not over the top, but really an emotional referee who really sold in every single call and was as animated as the players on the ice. So the referee community loses a legend yesterday as Frank Cudvari passes away in Kitchener.
So happy Friday, everybody.
Yeah, how about that, eh? Al Arbor's got dementia and Frank Cudvari died. Enjoy your weekend.
Jerks.
No. Yeah, thanks, hey, MVSW.
Good show today. Good show yesterday. Thanks to Ken Holland for joining us. Thanks to Allison for joining us for Game Show Friday. We'll be back next week. Last 2 weeks of August will be a little wonky here and there due to some scheduling, but we'll figure it out and come back with more exciting hockey talk. Before you know it, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be September. It's going to be training camp time for a return to the National Hockey League.
They're picking up the recipe for ice. The paint is coming out of the buckets as well. The boards are going up. Oh, the smell of Zamboni fumes are in the air. Is that bad coffee? It must be time for practice. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Thanks, homie.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Merrick. Thanks to Maddie for producing and such, and we will see you next week. Bye.